Welcome. You're on UFOs and the Paranormal. And my name is Christine Kisara-Dannett. I'm going to be your host tonight, and I'm going to be interviewing one of my most favorite people, investigator, brother-in-law, and just a really great guy, Preston Dannett. And he has a really special show for us today, and he's going to be talking to us about, well, let us know, Preston, what are you going to be talking about?
I want to talk about the five biggest UFO events in about the last decade. These are the biggest, these are the UFO events that could not be covered up, that made it to the mainstream news, and had a huge, and were seen, you know, by a lot of people, had really strong evidence. These are the biggest ones.
That's really neat. I just wanted to hear you say that. I was thinking to myself, ten? But, you know, because of the fact that they can't cover it up, that's what's so remarkable. And when you see television right now and you hear them talking about how the government is making these UFOs and the people that are reporting these UFOs are seeing government-flown objects and things like that,
I
think, you know, they're still trying to cover it up in some weird, convoluted way.
They truly are. You know, it's the evidence is undeniable. It's demonstrable that there is a cover-up. It's easy to prove. All it takes is a little investigation, really.
Yeah, and I guess the biggest question I have for you is, have you really seen any shows that are completely legitimate without some kind of government cover-up involved with that show?
Sure, I would say that there are some up there. You know, I think that it's a difficult avenue for UFO documentaries and UFO shows out there to sell them to producers and to the networks, because they always want the skeptic side. And in what other field of research do you bring on someone who totally denigrates your research and poo-poos it and tries to say it isn't even real? I mean, it's just absurd. It's preposterous.
Even with undeniable evidence.
Right. That's the reason why. It's because the evidence is undeniable. You know, Christy, I don't know how many UFO encounters occur every day, but the National UFO Reporting Center receives maybe, you know, from California alone, pretty much every day they receive calls.
And, the National UFO Reporting Center?
Right, and so does MUFON, you know, and this is just from one state. So we're talking maybe 100, maybe 1,000 encounters every day occur. UFO encounters, landings, abductions, dramatic sightings, 1,000 a day.
So what category would you consider the five sightings that you consider that you're going to be talking about tonight?
Right. And so, well, that's my point. I mean, like, we have all these encounters occurring every day, and only a few ever kind of trickle down through all the hoops they have to get through to get to the mainstream public to hear about it at all, because the cover-up, for one thing. I mean, I think that's probably the main reason.
Mm-hmm.
People, you know, people are still skeptical. I'd say about 50% of the population, maybe a little less. And there's this attitude of ridicule in the mainstream media. And there is an actual suppression of UFO information in the media, which is proved by Terry Hansen's book, The Missing Times, along with many other researchers, of course, but he laid it out there, undeniable proof.
And that's really interesting.
Right. So the first one I want to talk about is just over 10 years ago, actually, the Phoenix Lights, which is, you know, now I would say one of the top 10 UFO encounters in history, honestly. And that's saying a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Roswell, I'm going to say that's probably the biggest UFO case. The Hudson Valley UFO wave, that was huge. But the Phoenix Lights, this is one of the most widely viewed UFO sightings in history. It occurred on March 13th, 1997, and over Phoenix, Arizona. And people reported different things, orbs and lights, but most witnesses saw a very large triangular-shaped object, which was an estimated 6,000 feet in length. And it moved at a very kind of slowish speed right over Arizona. It took an estimated 106 minutes to pass overhead. And apparently later in the evening, there was a group of flares dropped by the Air Force, though this is very controversial. And this was apparently done to confuse the issue, though, again, that's a speculation. So, but you know how this whole thing started? Christy, it's like with other big events, there's a little bit of a, I don't know how to call it, what to call it, bleed through, a sort of a early signs that something big is going to happen. Because for several weeks before it happened, people were seeing these orbs and lights over Phoenix. Dr. Lynn Kitai, she ended up becoming one of the major UFO researchers of the Phoenix Lights, and she was actually photographing them. Some people saw them hovering over the Verdi nuclear power plant. But it was on March 13th when this massive black triangular-shaped craft flew over Phoenix at a very low altitude. It was totally silent. It was seen by an estimated thousands of people, including pilots, saw it, air traffic controllers, police officers, and even, we found out later, the governor of Arizona, Fife Symington, saw it. It was videotaped. It was photographed. Police received hundreds of calls, as did the local Luke Air Force Base. Though in both cases, this turned out to be a huge controversy, too. And it all started about 8:16 when NewFork, the National UFO Reporting Center, started receiving calls. And the first call came from a police officer, said he saw lights heading towards Phoenix. About 5 minutes later, calls at the phone lines at NewFork were jammed with calls from all over Phoenix, Wickenburg, Glendale, Scottsdale, and Tempe, all across, that area of Arizona. And this is when the police were receiving calls and Luke Air Force Base. Now, first, Luke Air Force Base first admitted that they did receive calls from people and then denied it, whereas the police first denied it and then admitted that they had received hundreds of calls.
That's really funny.
This is just an example of how people react. That's what I find most interesting to these huge cases is the reaction, actually.
Well, because of the fact that it got publicized right away, from what I understand, a researcher called the news, I think it was, and it got publicized right away as it was happening.
Right, not as it was happening. Oh, perhaps it was. I wasn't aware of that, but not on.
Well, Bill Hamilton.
Uh huh.
I seem to recall a long time ago talking to him, and he, I guess he's the one that called up the news people and got them to start filming it.
Oh wow!
I don't know if you knew about that.
Perhaps that was the flares, because those were filmed and shown a lot in the media. The actual craft itself, there's only like one or two videotapes that show that. But Bill Hamilton,
that's interesting. See, I heard something different. But that was a long time ago, right when it was happening in the same year.
Bill Hamilton is one of the leading researchers to this whole event. But so many people saw this. There was a little league coach, and both teams and all their families were playing at a game. They all stopped playing and watched this thing move overhead. People all across the cars stopped in roads. People went running out of the office buildings, out of their homes. It was just this incredible thing. And people described the same exact craft, and it had a very weird distortion to it as well when people looked over it. Up at it.
Do you know, maybe the distance of this sighting and how many people? Like, if you were to take a map And
right. Well, they did chart it.
Yeah.
They charted it as it moved from the calls and from the witnesses. And it apparently went south over Arizona and did a loop, a U-turn, and went back over and left off to the north. But there was, I mean, for example, there was a Phoenix councilwoman, Frances Barwood, and she was the only official who called for a probe into the event, and she spoke with over 700 witnesses, including, you know, police and pilots and former military officials, all who said that it was not ours. And she says that the government never interviewed one witness and never did any investigation officially into this event. She couldn't get anyone to help her with this investigation. She was stonewalled at every angle. And same thing with the governor, Fife Symington. He later admitted that he did, in fact, see it. He said it was a solid object. It was huge. And he tried to get some official answers and could not get anything. Nothing.
Did you hear of any abduction cases during this time?
No, I didn't actually.
No contactees or anything like that?
It's entirely possible that it did happen. But Luke
it's
Air Force
Base... It's such an extraordinary story.
It is. Luke Air Force Base, you know, they were, of course, contacted, and they released a statement saying that no jets were scrambled and nothing unusual occurred that they were aware of, which is laughable. That's absolutely laughable that something like of this size could go right over the city and they're not even aware of it.
Well, 700 people, I mean, who makes that stuff up, you know?
Right. And, you know, in the year 2000, a class action lawsuit was filed by witnesses, and the Department of Defense maintained that they couldn't find any information about this object as requested by a U.S. District Court in Phoenix. And so there you go. That's a big one, right?
Yeah.
Now, here's another one. This is one that also got into the news. Somehow, some of these events just can't be covered up. I mean, you can't cover up 1,000 people see stuff, right? Well, this next event occurred in Illinois, all across Illinois, on January 5th, 2000, right in the new year. And it began at 4 a.m. when a large box-like or triangular-shaped object was first seen in central Illinois. This truck driver, he was out at 4 a.m. when he saw this star-like object. And he thought, well, that's bright, but didn't think much of it. And then it got closer and closer and closer, and he looked at it, and it was this giant object with, like, two levels or floors, and it had rows of windows. And he estimated it was 500 feet high and was heading straight for Lebanon, the city of Lebanon in like, central Illinois. So what he does is he races over to the Lebanon Police Department and rushes in there and says, there's a UFO that's heading up towards the city. And this is where the story gets really interesting. This is when the police officers became involved, and this is what makes this case, you know, stand out. This is at 4:15 a.m., January 5th. Officer Ed Barton is dispatched to the scene, and he goes out, you know, looking through the streets and sees this object. And he radios back. He says he can see it. He estimates it's about 1,000 feet in altitude. He watched it stop, rotate, and pivot while remaining perfectly level. And suddenly it accelerated at high speed out of sight and moved towards southwest, towards Shiloh. And this is about 6 miles away, right? Meanwhile, in Shiloh, police officer David Martin is monitoring the radio frequencies. And he hears, you know, Officer Ed Barton say the UFO is heading towards him. So he's patrolling the streets, and he sees this object approaching at about 15 miles an hour, and he says it was about 1,000 feet in altitude, just like the other guy. It was triangular-shaped, at least 100 yards wide, and he could see these three beams of light shining downward from the bottoms of it and smaller colored lights at the end of it. And so he jumps out of his car.
I think I lost the feed. I don't hear you any longer.
You can't hear me? Can you hear me? Christy, can you hear me?
name in my soul. Well, you make my eyes close, close, close. Now I'm falling, falling, it's over. What, you push me down? I can't even see the light you left for me in the beginning. The sun went down and suddenly it's raining. Gotta keep fighting, I just don't like the way you leave me here. Scared into the sand forever, I'm seeing you close, you rule my world. I can't believe I was your baby girl.
Well, sorry for the technical difficulty, but those things happen. Maybe it's the ETs just trying to get involved in some way. Okay, Preston, where did we last discuss your story? It was in Illinois, and
right.
There was a triangular-shaped ship, and it was traveling to, where was it, Shiloh?
Right, right. It was heading towards Shiloh. This was Ed Barton, Officer Ed Barton of Lebanon, was dispatched to find this UFO, and he sees it. And he watches it stop and hover, and then it takes off real quick towards Shiloh. And meanwhile, in Shiloh, Officer David Martin is monitoring the radio frequencies, and he goes out and he sees it. And he says it's moving at about 15 miles per hour overhead. It's at about 1,000 feet high. It's triangular-shaped, 100 yards wide. And three beams of light are coming down from the bottom of this craft, and there's colored lights at the rear end, right?
Uh-huh.
So he exits out of his car, and he can't hear anything. And as soon as he gets out of his car, this object suddenly accelerates really quickly. He's estimating at about 100 miles per hour and moves southwest towards the next town, Millstatt. Now, this is 13 miles away, and 15 minutes later, about police officer Craig Stevens, who was monitoring the radio frequencies, hears this talk about the UFO heading towards his town. So he jumps into his squad car to search for it. And sure enough, he sees it moving at about 1,000 feet directly over the city. And he radios his superiors. He tells them it's huge, it's V-shaped. And he jumps out of his car, too, and he snaps a photograph, which actually did come out. It shows this white object, a white light in the sky. It's not really a very impressive photograph, but he could hear it emitting a low buzzing sound, and he watches this object move northwest towards the next town of Dupo. And in Dupo, this next town, another officer who has insisted on remaining anonymous also observed this object. He had heard the radio traffic and went outside to see if he could see it, and he saw this large array of lights, he called it, moving pretty high up. It wasn't 1,000 feet altitude. It was much higher. And he said it was increasing in altitude, and he watched it go off, you know, kind of turning into a star-like object and disappearing into outer space. So there you go. You know, now, while all this is happening, the police are receiving, you know, a bunch of calls, as are their local newspapers. And when reporters found out that there were so many police officers, well, this is what made it front page news. And the police were forthcoming. They actually had so many requests, they had to put up a website, which crashed. It got so many hits.
So. That's really cool, because they were in communique. You know, they were just, like, all connected. And that's, like, movie material right there.
Right.
So cool.
So here's where the cover-up starts, right?
Uh-oh. So,
Bill Klass, our arch skeptic, said it was Venus. Now, come on. It was obviously not Venus, right? And here's the weird part. The investigators were able to pretty much chart the path of this object exactly, because there were so many witnesses. So they put a map up, and they charted the path of this object, and it went right through, pretty much right directly over Scott Air Force Base. It was like 1 or 2 miles from the actual base itself, right over restricted airspace. But officials at the base were contacted, and they said that they had no knowledge of any object at all, and they said that they had no radar because their airport control tower was closed at the time. So, come on. Here we go again, an object going directly over an Air Force base, and they don't know? Come on. It's just not believable.
Yeah, it's not possible.
But it was definitely the biggest case of the year. The National Institute for Scientific Discovery said that they did a bunch of research into it, and they said that they got information that it may have been one of ours. I kind of doubt that, because why would they be testing?
You said there were three beams coming out the bottom of it.
Right, beams of light.
Right, and that was in which city was it in?
I think that was like, let me see, the third city of Shiloh.
Shiloh. Now that's fascinating when you start reporting beams coming out of ships. I don't know if the government has a ship that does that.
I don't know. And if they do, you know, it's just hard for me to believe that they're going to be testing it over police officers in small towns across Illinois. Right?
Well, there's maneuvers, too, that you got to consider when you're looking at an aircraft to identify whether it's, you know, man-made or UFO. Some man-made stuff, it's impossible to make something like that. Not unless they have some kind of superior technology that they're, you know, using.
Right.
You said a couple of things that were interesting to me. Where it rotated.
Right, it pivoted. He said it made it perfectly level. Exactly, rotated on its axis almost.
And the size, the sheer size of it, I think is just really remarkable.
Yeah, you know, like the Phoenix Lights craft, that was like over a mile long. So that's just inconceivable.
And the way that it was moving, too. I know with the Phoenix Light one, when you were talking about that, it moves slowly. I'm not sure about size and aircraft and, you know, flight, but...
Yeah, that one didn't dart around, that's for sure. This other one in Illinois did some darting and hovering, and it did the whole thing. So, but it was easily the biggest case of the year, easily. It seems like every couple of years, one just gets so big that it breaks through the barrier, the cover-up barrier, the threshold of whatever it's needed, enough evidence.
Well, it's quite apparent that people are open for it if their website crashed.
Yeah, from what I understand, it had like a million hits.
Wow.
In the first month. So, people are definitely interested in this stuff, and it's not going to go away. And it was just a couple of years later, it's like every couple of years, a huge incident happens. That the Mexican Air Force photographed UFOs, actually, and released the footage. So this was huge. And this happened on March 5th. 2004, when the Mexican Air Force was on a patrol to search for illegal drug smuggling over southern Mexico, over like the Campeche area, and they caught something on their radar that they couldn't see, and they finally decided it must be a vehicle down on the ground, but they didn't know, because it was an unusual radar return, right? So it was shortly after that that they didn't see, but they had this camera, an infrared camera, mounted on one of the planes. And this camera picked up 11 spherical glowing objects, sort of just hovering there and flying along with the plane. This is what the pilots said. And they couldn't see it with their naked eyes, and it wasn't appearing on radar. It was only on this onboard infrared camera, which was mounted on a dome on the plane. So that's weird, right? But not unique. You know, people have caught UFOs with various imaging technologies that you can't see. You know, it's certainly UFOs have the ability to turn invisible to the naked eye and still be there. That's been reported an awful lot. But one of the pilots, Major Magdaleno Castanon, he said that their jets actually chased these lights. And he says, I'm quoting here, I believe they could feel we were pursuing them. And he says that the objects moved erratically and with great speed. And so this was a huge event in Mexico. This was actually, a huge step towards ending the UFO cover-up. The military had never been this forthcoming before. And Mexico's Secretary of Defense, the General Gerardo Clemente Vega Garcia, actually conducted his own investigation into the incident, and it was he who allowed the public release of this information, which happened on May 13th, about 2 months after the actual event.
That's really
great.
That's
pretty interesting, right? Now, there are skeptics. There's this aerospace engineer, James Smith, who says he believes it's oil fires mounted on platforms in the ocean, off in the distance. And there were, in fact, some oil platforms burning. But the skeptics are always there, ready to come up with an alternate explanation.
I think it's funny because they hold us accountable for evidence, but they're not really forthcoming when it comes to the evidence that they can provide for us. So in terms of skeptics coming in and making comments about what has happened, especially when it comes to Mexican official announcements, and then seeing all this footage on YouTube, it's really funny because I don't think too many people really believe skeptics anymore.
No, it's a joke, seeing these guys on Larry King who come up and try and... I mean, the explanations are ludicrous. And, what's interesting is the governments, although they may officially, the Air Force or what have you, say that UFOs don't exist and are hoaxes, hallucinations, and misperceptions, they're now becoming more and more forthcoming. France recently did a huge UFO disclosure, as did England. Huge. And Canada, I think it was the former prime minister or something like that, a highly placed official, made some really remarkable statements about that having UFO technology and that it should be released. And so this Mexican sighting was, that this release of information was also kind of unprecedented in terms of, the Mexican government, at least.
And they've had extraordinary sightings. I mean, not besides that, they've had huge witnesses, giant amounts of witnesses that have had sightings over there in Mexico.
All right, over Mexico City, absolutely. What was that date? I forget what it was. During the eclipse, 1991, I think it was. Maybe it was 1997. Actually, I've got the date right here.
It's too bad you didn't go a little bit further. You went to watch the eclipse.
Right.
Too bad you didn't go to Mexico City.
That would have been even more remarkable, I think.
You would have seen all the UFOs.
Yeah, that was 1991. That was definitely the biggest event of that year, that Mexican wave. And they've been very forthcoming since then because they have to. Everyone that down there is seeing them all the time.
And the reporter there that works and concentrates on UFOs, he really gathers up a lot of evidence and video and everything. He's done a great job. I think he's turned around, a lot of people's belief systems.
Right. Doing a great job. Jaime Nassan, I think you're talking about.
Right.
That's March 5th, 2004. Mexican Air Force photographed UFOs and released it. So that's the really important part of the whole equation there, because we're photographing, I believe, UFOs constantly, our military. But we're not releasing it. So So
you know what I'm hoping is Obama, he's going to be the first president that says, yes, there are UFOs. Wouldn't that
well,
be cool?
He wouldn't be the first because, you know, presidents have made a lot of statements. Certainly Reagan said he saw one. And,
Jimmy Carter.
Jimmy Carter, that's right. And Carter said he was going to release UFO information. Ford as well. And Reagan made a bunch of really interesting statements. And isn't it interesting, the presidential nominee, Dennis Kucinich, I think that was his name, said he actually saw one when he was visiting Shirley MacLaine's house in Santa Fe, I believe. So
Shirley MacLaine, who wouldn't?
Yeah. So, you know, I think Obama, there's a lot of talk about that, actually. It's funny you mentioned that, there might be some really big releases of information. And
that'll be great.
That his administration did really well in releasing a lot of confidential information. I don't think he ever got around to UFOs, but it's too bad. So you want to hear about our next case?
Yeah, because later I'm going to ask you to rate them all.
Oh, no. All right. Okay, how much time do we have left? Okay, good. We're good.
Okay.
All right. This next case, this is about 2 years again, which after the Mexican Air Force one. This one occurred on November 7th, 2006, in the late afternoon, when a gray, egg-shaped object was observed hovering over Gate C-17 at Chicago O'Hare's International Airport. Now, what's amazing about this case...
airport.
That was exactly what I was going to say. I think it's the second biggest in the United States. It's a huge airport. It's absolutely enormous. And what's funny is UFOs are seen over airports a lot. I've got a chapter in my book, UFOs Over California, on the LAX airport sightings, which have been occurring for years and years. And I can list, you know, many, many other airports. I've got the books on which have had UFO sightings. And this is now one of Illinois' biggest UFO sightings, in their history at least, and certainly one of the biggest airport sightings. And it was a remarkable for a number of reasons, because during the sighting there was this overcast at about 2,000 feet. It was a very low, thick cloud cover overcast, and this object was well below it. It was hovering right over this gate C-17 and was observed by a group of mechanics and various United Airlines ground personnel. They said it had no wings, had no lights, its surface appeared to be metallic, but it had a kind of a soft luster that shone like a pearl. It was kind of pearlescent. And some witnesses reported seeing a haze around the bottom of this object, and kind of like heat waves off of a hot road, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
And one witness was in the airport parking lot and said that this object appeared to be spinning counterclockwise. And she also said that she watched a small crowd of other people kind of gather up, and everyone was pointing at the object. And several people were actually taking digital pictures with, you know, pictures with their phones, their digital phones. And in fact, you know, the Mexican Air Force footage and the footage of this O'Hare UFO can be seen online if you punch it in, O'Hare UFO. And there was apparently a lot of witnesses. So there's no information about any radar returns. And the FAA was, of course, contacted by the Chicago Tribune. This incident actually barely came to light. What happened was one of the mechanics contacted a reporter at the Chicago Tribune. And so the Chicago Tribune started, you know, sent a reporter to it and started investigating. And the Tribune contacted the FAA, and the FAA said that they had no knowledge of the incident. So the newspaper filed a Freedom of Information Act request, and the FAA immediately reversed their position and now said that there was some unspecified weather-related phenomenon. know,
huh.
And now here comes this. They contacted the United Airlines, and officials from United Airlines denied the incident entirely, said that they don't know anything about it, despite the fact that several of their employees told reporters that they filed written reports of the sighting to their company, including drawings. And so now these United Airlines employees, they also state, they're anonymous for obvious reasons because they don't want to lose their job. And people have lost their job over sightings like this. These employees further said that they were instructed by their employer to explicitly not to talk about the incident. So what's that? Can you imagine?
You know, I think they just get scared. They don't want to lose business. UFOs are bad for business. I mean,
are they? You know?
Yeah, that's the thing, you know. Why have the policy to keep things hush-hush? The only logical explanation I can think of is that it puts their reputation online, you know, and they don't want to
be
laughable.
Right, they clearly have something to cover up.
Yeah.
Who's ever covering this up, I mean. Otherwise, they would talk about it. And the problem is, people, when you lie and when you don't tell the truth, it just breeds distrust. And the truth is going to come out anyway.
That's so true. It is true, and especially when I've heard stories, this is off the subject, about how they take care of their airplanes and things like that. But that's another story.
Right. Well, so this case, it had a huge impact on the media. It was, of course, front page news and across newspapers and television programs, and even made it onto, like, mainstream TV. You know the show Boston Legal? It's
mm-hmm.
a fictional mm-hmm. fictional drama. One of the storylines for one of their episodes was all about this incident. It was about a therapist at a hospital who was fired for saying he saw a UFO over O'Hare, and they described the case in detail, and it was obvious that they ripped from the headlines. You know how they do that?
Ripped
from the headlines to make their show topical and relevant. And
a lot of this stuff is great for show business. It's so dramatic.
It really is, and they did a better treatment of it, I understand. I didn't actually see the episode, but I heard they did it.
Huh.
They actually did a better treatment of it than a lot of the other discussions you've heard in the other media. They described the case in perfect detail.
Well, I'm sure you could find the show online somewhere. And actually,
you're probably right. So
and you have
cool?
one more case.
Yeah, there's one more case, and I think we just have a perfect amount of time to talk about it because it's a biggie. And this is the one that occurred pretty much exactly 1 year ago, and this is over Stephenville, Texas. And boy, did this hit the media hard. I mean, it was all over the news on January 8th, 2008, and just a huge, huge news story, and was easily the biggest UFO case of the year. And like these other cases, there were sightings leading up to it. MUFON says that they were received like first double and then triple the amount of sightings coming from that area. And then it was on this day, January 8th, that a group of at least one or more objects were seen moving at low altitude directly over Stephenville, Texas, which is kind of a dairy and farming community about 100 miles southwest of Dallas. And this object was heading directly towards Crawford, which is where President George Bush has his ranch. I don't know what that means, but I think it's kind of just an interesting aspect to this whole event. Now, you know, this occurred later in the day, right? But earlier that day, a bunch of people noticed something really strange, which was chemtrails. The whole sky was crisscrossed with contrails from planes, apparently military planes. And there were so many that people were taking photographs of it. It was causing a buzz in the town, right? Why are there so many contrails? This is called chemtrails, and the theory behind chemtrails, I don't know if you know, but is one of the theories at least, probably the most popular, is that our government is releasing chemicals into the air to reflect back light to counteract the whole greenhouse effect. Only this is causing illnesses within the population, and this is another theory that it's being done in a conspiratorial way to sort of hypnotize the population or dumb them down in some way, drug them.
Uh-huh.
But whatever the case is, it's a prelude to this event, and maybe it was what triggered this massive UFO sighting, which was seen by like 50 people. More than 50 people watched this object move overhead. One guy, Steve Allen, he was at a friend's house, and they were burning some debris when they saw these lights coming towards them. And they thought it was several aircraft at first approaching sort of a formation, but the lights were much more intense and very bright, and they all moved the exact same speed and altitude, about 3,000 feet above the ground. They came by very fast and flew by and then came back by. And that's when he said he saw military craft in pursuit, about 4 or 5 seconds behind it. And this guy, Mr. Allen, Steve Allen, says he spoke with a number of other people who also saw this object being chased by military jets, and including a police officer and one of the managers of the Stephenville Airport and several pilots. So these are good witnesses, right?
Uh-huh.
Another guy, James Hughes, he was about 2 blocks from the center of the town. He saw this object moving straight overhead, and it hovered for a second, he said. And he said he didn't see any military aircraft, but he couldn't hear any noise, and whatever this thing was, it was very low in the sky and very close. And he said it was fascinating because, I mean, there's so many other witnesses and who saw this stuff. So it was like this object was putting on some sort of a display.
And now, what was the date again on this?
This was January 8th, 2008.
Okay.
And that's what I think is happening in these cases. Each one of these, actually, is that these UFOs are showing themselves off on purpose. I really do. I think that they're
purposefully showing themselves.
That was predicted.
Remember?
That's the Stephenville one?
Well,
they were
saying that they're going to start coming out and showing themselves to us.
The
contactees that you've interviewed.
Right. Oh, that's true. Right. And this actual Stephenville sighting was predicted by a psychic, actually.
Oh, a psychic. Okay. Yeah, I had a feeling.
But a bunch of police officers saw it. The first officer said he saw it hover at a low altitude of about 500 feet. He said it was about 600 feet long. The second officer said he saw it moving very slowly, and it turned on its side, stopped, and moved straight up. He could only see its shape because it was covered with so many different colored lights. And so you know what he does? He whips out his radar gun, and he actually clocks it on his radar gun, moving at 27 miles per hour off into the distance.
Huh. That's pretty smart.
Isn't that cool?
That's
well, here's
some data.
Right. Here's where it gets really interesting. MUFON investigators were able to get radar confirmation of the event, right? There was radar of this whole ship ships as it's moving over, and a lot of radar, just an enormous amount of data. And so they correlated it to see if it actually matched up with what witnesses said they saw, where they saw it and how it was moving. And it sure did. Exactly where the witnesses said they were seeing it. This is where the radar showed the object. So it's incredible evidence. And one of the best radar visual cases on record now.
Do you think it's on YouTube?
I'm sure it is. You can actually see you can pull it up on the internet. Absolutely, you can.
I would like to see that.
So this object moved apparently within 10 miles of Bush's ranch in Crawford. It's putting on a display, right?
Uh-huh.
So it's got some kind of message there. I don't know. But the Air Force, they totally bungled this one. First, they claimed that they weren't there. And Major Carl Lewis, a spokesman for the Naval Air Station at Fort Worth, released an official statement saying that there were no F-16s or other aircraft over Stephenville on that night. But then they later said that they were there. They reversed their position and said that they had no less than 10 F-16 fighters training over Stephenville, and that it was their jets that were responsible for the UFO reports. So they're completely lying all over the place. I mean, their story is changing, right? But both versions cannot be true.
No.
And here's the really unfortunate part. One of the witnesses claims he was actually threatened. He said after he had this remarkable sighting and was going to the media and talking all about it, and at this point he started getting low-level flyovers of military aircraft over his home. So he called him up the military, and he was told not to speak about it, and he refused, and the officer on the line said bullets are cheap. Can you believe that?
Yeah, I can believe it.
So photographs were taken, again, videotape were taken, and it just became a huge, huge publicity event. I mean, people, they sold T-shirts of it. They decided to make T-shirts. They sold like 1,200 T-shirts. Almost immediately made $12,000. students of the
capitalized
at the high school. So
well, out of all five, which one do you think is number one?
Oh well, clearly it is the. Let me think. I'm going to say it's the Phoenix Lights, by far. It's just seen by so many. That's the one that's going to go down in history. It really will. The others. Maybe forgotten, but that's still one of the top 10 UFO events in the world.
Well, Preston, I think it's going to get even better because of technology and the iPhones and the ability of people being able to take pictures wherever, whenever, and, you know, there's just no way anybody can lie anymore about it. It's kind of like showing the public their ignorance and their inability to work with today's technology. And, you know, people have evidence now. I mean, there's probably a whole bunch of cell phones out there right now that have at least one picture of the sightings that you're speaking of, you know.
Exactly.
And it's very interesting the dates that you've given. It's about the same time when video cameras came out, and, you know, there's so much data out there right now and so much film, and it's really going to be interesting what happens in about 10 years. I mean, it's undeniable that the government's going to have to admit that there are UFOs, you know, officially,
right,
and have to deal with it. On an official level.
I can't wait.
Yeah, I can't wait either.
It should have been taught in schools. You know, I was never taught this in college at all. Not all through school, high school, nothing. There was not a word of any UFOs all through school. It really shocked me.
Well, I think that's probably your next step, Preston. Educating the public.
That's a good idea. I could teach classes on UFOs. Which I've actually done.
You'd be a great teacher. I really appreciate everybody listening to the show. It's called UFOs and the Paranormal, and my name is Christine Kisara Dennett. I have a website, kisaraart.com. I do a lot of Preston Dennett's illustrations for his books. He also has a website, and what is your website, Preston?
It's prestondennett.com. If you just type in my name, it'll come up, and I need to get it updated. I'm getting high-speed internet, so I'm going to do that now and get my other books on there. But it's got the first half of my books on there.
So thank you very much for listening, and if you have any comments or if you want to share your story with us, be free to check out our website, and our email is on the website, and have a wonderful, wonderful evening. Thank you so much, Preston.
Thank you, Christy.